This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. With the election just a few days away, chances are you've already picked a candidate, and you probably already know how the candidate stands on issues such as the war in Iraq or abortion. But what about science and technology? Issues such as stem cell research or intellectual property on the internet, space exploration, or spam. We've gathered a panel of folks who have analyzed the positions of President Bush and Senator Kerry on those and other science and technology issues, either by looking at their records or by asking the campaigns direct questions about the candidates' positions. And we're going to help you sort through them this hour. So give us a call. Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. My guest, Jeffrey Mervis, is the deputy news editor for Science Magazine. He put together a Q&A with Bush and Kerry campaigns on a variety of science issues. He joins us from our studios in Washington. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Roger Cocchetti is the group director for U.S. Public Policy at the Computing Technology Industry Association in Arlington, Virginia. That industry trade group sent a similar questionnaire to the campaigns, but focused instead on technology issues, and he's also in our Washington studios. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ira.
Thank you. Dan Greenberg is no stranger to Science Friday. He's author of the book Science, Money, and Politics in the University of Chicago Press and is the Washington contributing editor of The Lancet. He joins us from WXPN in Philadelphia. Good to have you back, Dan.
Thanks, Ira. Glad to join you.
Let me start with you. You've been a political observer, I guess, four decades or more in the Washington scene. How big an issue is science policy in this election, if anything?
Well, for the scientific community, it's a very big issue. I think for the public at large, it's one of the smaller issues in the campaign. But it certainly does have the scientific community riled up. And I think for the first time since the 1964 election, scientists have organized it to some significant extent to back a candidate, and that candidate is John Kerry.
When you say they're riled up about what?
Well, there are two categories of issues that get the scientists highly bothered. One are the externals, the application of science and technology, and you'll see that, for example, in climate change policy, the withdrawal of the U.S. government from the Missile Defense Treaty, fuel economy standards, which the administration has opposed. Then you have the internal affairs of the scientific community, and there the scientists feel that their prerogatives have been trampled upon with the intrusion of so-called litmus tests for appointments to really important scientific advisory committees, the importance of the presidential science advisor in the formulation of science policy, and various issues like that. So I think in both categories, the scientific community feels that it just hasn't been well treated.
Robert Cocchetti, what about technology policy? Are there hot buttons issues here?
I think there are, Ira, but I think it's also important to put it in context and maybe contrast it with the science community.
I'm sorry, interest. I called you Robert. It's Roger. I'm sorry.
Go That's ahead. Okay. Thank Go you. Ahead. The tech policy-oriented segment of the voting public is a relatively new phenomenon, whereas there have been people, voters interested in science policy around for at least 100 years, it's really only in the past five or so years that we've begun to recognize that there's a segment of the voting public that is tech policy oriented. And this consists really of two main elements. First, tech workers and their families. And there are probably about 10 million technology workers in the United States today. And if you add their families in, you're looking at about 15 million voters. And then add to that non-tech workers who are technology policy oriented, people who work at home, who live at home, who use the internet or technology for entertainment or whatever. Combined, we would say that about one out of every five voters today is technology policy oriented, but few of them put this at the top of their list. Few of them are single issue voters. So tech policy oriented voters are a very important emerging segment of the voting public, but tech policy is a secondary issue for them. That's very important in a race that's close, like the presidential race we're looking at right now.
If you could pick out one tech policy issue, what would it be?
I guess I would say broadband probably comes to the top of my list because it's the one where most there's been the most activity, the most expression of interest.
Tell people who don't understand what you mean by broadband. as an
most
issue?
Most of us, when we want to access the internet from our homes or our offices, have to deal with sort of what is the speed of the connection. Mm-hmm. If you're using a dial-up connection on a telephone line, you're probably getting a connection that's 56 kilobits or mm-hmm. hopefully better, but something in that range. Whereas if you're using one of the more advanced connections, such as a cable or a DSL connection, you're getting a speed of connection that's multiples of that. And that permits you to do all sorts of things right. with your computer and the internet you wouldn't otherwise do. The issue is what should or what can the federal government do to make it easier, less expensive for a broadband connection to homes, schools, libraries, even offices and others. Mm-hmm. And both candidates have actively addressed that issue.
Is there one big difference between the candidates on that issue, or are they in agreement?
Well, I think both candidates absolutely agree that the deployment of broadband is very important to the future of our economy, to a future of education, culture, everything. Each has a slightly different emphasis in how they would approach the deployment or the rapid deployment of broadband. I think it's fair to say that President Bush has put a heavy emphasis on deregulation and letting market forces intervene in the absence of any government regulation, whereas Senator Kerry has put an emphasis on government incentives and in particular tax incentives for both the current broadband connection as well as a new generation of broadband, which would be even higher speed and permit video and other things to be done. So, you know, I don't think either candidate would take strong exception to what the other says, but you can, if you look at the response to our survey, which is at comptia.org, you can see and read their answers, you can see that there's a difference in emphasis between the two candidates.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Mervis, your magazine Science posed a series of questions to each of the candidates on science policy issues. What were some of the responses, and what were typical responses and typical differences?
Well, I think that just to pick up a little bit on what Dan said, there's actually two aspects to science as the U.S. government supports it. One is funding, and one is sort of the rules that govern how it is supported. And I think it's on the second that a lot of scientists are upset with what the Bush administration has been doing. I think the stem cell debate on embryonic stem cells is a good example of that. The candidates obviously have different views.
Mm-hmm. And you say this scientist, but and you can all jump in. Is the public using stem? Does the public view stem cells as a big issue, or just the scientists who do the work and are involved in their little communities?
I think the public is beginning to catch on to the potential of stem cell research because there's been so much publicity. And, of course, with Christopher Reeve's death, the stem cell issue was revived all over again. But the public in general is very hopeful, maybe overly optimistic about medical research. And stem cell research now, I think, is in the forefront of the hopes and the aspirations. And mm-hmm. I think they may be a bit excessive, but a lot of people are quite fired up about it.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones. Anne in Hubbardston, Mass, right?
Massachusetts, right.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just curious. I was kind of upset the other day when I heard that John Kerry was against the Kyoto Treaty, too. And I'm just wondering if you could maybe explain why are politicians so afraid of it? I don't really understand that.
Dan, can you tackle that?
The Kyoto Treaty has a long and tangled history. I think even the most ardent advocates of it would agree that it would really by itself would not achieve very much, and it certainly would not meet the timetables. It does offend and does raise great concerns in industrial and in business circles that there will be all kinds of restrictions upon greenhouse gas emissions and the size of vehicles and things of that sort. So I think it's prudent in an election season to be a bit wary of the treaty. And Kerry has sort of a mixed record on this, and he was part of the Senate delegation that went over as observers for the treaty in 1997, but he also voted for a non-binding resolution that essentially gutted the treaty. So it's, I think, election season gyrations, and I think that perhaps accounts for the senator's positions on this.
Okay, Ann? Thanks. Also, speaking of Kyoto, hand-in-hand with Kyoto is energy policy. We've had very fuzzy differences, Dan, on energy policy. They're not quite that distinct, are they?
Well, again, on energy policy, it's very hard to distinguish and know where the true heart lies in these matters. If we are going to have an effective energy policy, the public is going to have to pay for it. And perhaps the best way to have an effective energy policy would be a really stiff tax increase, federal tax mm-hmm. increase on gas and gasoline. Kerry flirted with that about 10 years ago. He proposed in a speech a 50% increase to provide an incentive for using less gasoline and give people an idea that it would be beneficial to have smaller cars or more efficient cars. He instantly backed away from that, and nothing much more has been heard about it. Mm-hmm. Energy policy is something that the U.S. government and politics have been wrestling with and having waltzing with for 20 years now, and we really haven't gotten very far. Mm-hmm. It's a very dangerous issue politically because there are all kinds of constituencies that feel that they would have to pay an excessive price for the benefit of the entire public.
Or possibly offend people like the coal miners who...
We can offend the coal miners, yeah. And there's West Virginia, which is considered to be one of the swing states. Energy permeates the whole economy, and then we have various segments that say, hey, that's our piece of territory, and don't tinker with it to our disadvantage.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I think politicians, wisely look at the lay of the land, and they say, there's no point in getting this particular constituency aroused.
Yet both candidates agree that there is a hydrogen future in our economy. On the other hand, though, you hear Senator Kerry talk about that more. Is that just just talk?
Well, talk is cheap about hydrogen, but yeah. It's one of the great fantasies of the energy landscape. We are not going to have hydrogen-powered fleets of cars. We may have the odd car. In fact, there are a few on the road today. But to have over 100 million vehicles powered by hydrogen when we don't know how we produce the hydrogen, handle it, it's very dangerous stuff. And has to be handled with great caution. It requires technologies that haven't been developed yet. There are high hopes and a great deal of money is being spent, but I don't think anybody realistically expects hydrogen to be an important part of the energy economy for decades.
Jeff Mervis, your questionnaire asked the candidates for their top three science and technology priorities. Can you give us what their answers were?
Yeah, their answers, Ira, were quite different, and I think they illustrate what the emphasis is. President talked about broadband, talked about hydrogen research, and talked about using science to combat terrorism. I think we've touched on the first two issues. The third issue maybe fits into the same category. There is a lot of hope that science and technology can deal with the issue, but I think a lot of scientists are skeptical as to what that would actually mean. Senator Kerry gave a more traditional and broader answer that focused on restoring U.S. leadership in science, training and education, and also getting the best possible advice. Again, this gets to one of the issues that many scientists are concerned about, that the administration has been tilting the table in deciding who it's going to get advice from and how it's going to make its decisions.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break, come back and join our guests, Jeffrey Mervis, Roger Cocchetti, and Dan Greenberg. Take your questions about presidential science policy, John Kerry's ideas and where he would go. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about science and technology policy issues in this year's election. My guests are Jeffrey Mervis of Science Magazine. Roger Cocchetti is the Group Director of U.S. Public Policy at the Computing Technology Industry Association. Dan Greenberg, Washington Contributing Editor of The Lancet. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Now, one issue that was just hardly touched at all at the debates was the issue of the environment and where the candidates, would go in the environment, yet you always see that it's pretty high up on the list of, clean air, clean water, on the list of what people are interested in. Did you find any of that, Jeffrey, reflected in the candidates' positions?
Well, I think that both of the candidates are taking pretty mainline positions for their parties. I think Senator Kerry, for example, opposes drilling in the Arctic Natural Wildlife Preserve. That's an issue that the Republicans are strongly in favor of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, as Dan had said earlier, that Senator Kerry has gone out on a limb on too many environmental issues mm-hmm. because they are two-edged swords.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones. Lots of people with calls. Andy in Sacramento. Hi, Andy.
Hi, good morning. Great topic.
Go ahead.
I'm curious what your panelists might have to say about the Canned Spam Act, which became law on January the 1st of this year. And instead of outlawing spam, it basically legalized it thanks to lobbyists from the Direct Marketing Association and this absurd opt-out mechanism, which forces people to opt out of lists they never opted into.
Roger Cuccetti?
I'm happy to respond. That was one of the when we developed this questionnaire for the candidates, we identified 12 topics that we thought would be of interest to tech policy oriented voters, and spam was one of them. So we asked each candidate what their thoughts were on the role of the federal government in dealing with spam. Senator Kerry basically indicated that he was open-minded as to the best way that the federal government could intervene in this area. He gave a sort of very broad comment. President Bush responded by emphasizing, I think as his administration has, that technology tools as opposed to government regulation are a critical element in dealing with the problem of spam. I think both candidates made very clear that they see this as a problem. They see this as a problem the federal government should get involved with. But I think President Bush emphasized the enforcement of the provisions in canned spam. That's now federal law. But he gave equal emphasis, I think it's fair to say, to the role of technology tools in dealing with spam. So I don't know if that answers the, mm-hmm. the question, but it kind of describes how the two candidates view the issue.
Andy, thank you for calling. Does that answer your question?
Not entirely. It is going to be a matter of both some legislation and technological fixes, but the Canned Spam Act made the problem worse.
Mm-hmm. What about issues of thanks for calling of privacy of internet traffic and how the war on terrorism has impacted privacy of internet traffic? Is that an issue at all?
It was certainly one of the 12 we asked about, and let me remind your listeners again that they can see the whole survey if they go to comptia.org, and they can judge for themselves what the candidates think about these issues. But on the issue of protecting privacy, consumer individual privacy on the Internet, both candidates made clear this was of paramount importance to them. It was an area that the government had a role to play and that the government should be active in helping protect consumer privacy on the Internet. Both responded, I think, with slightly different emphasis. President Bush, in this case, emphasized the importance of enforcing the laws that are on the books and using the machinery of the federal, state, local law enforcement to prevent and prosecute privacy invasions. Senator Kerry, in this case, emphasized the importance of technology tools. As an effective means or an equally effective means of dealing with privacy protection on the Internet. So I think you'll find both candidates, as you go through mm-hmm. the survey, emphasizing at various times the role of federal intervention and technology tools, two major themes, I think, of tech policy-oriented voters anyway. But in this case, I think Senator Kerry really put more emphasis on technology mm. tools than perhaps in some other areas.
Mm. Gentlemen, I get an impression from just watching over the years that I think this is the first time in a while that religion has played a role in presidential science policy. At least the president has talked about his faith as guiding him through his presidency, and at times when science has collided with the religion, he has sided more with his religious views, saying such things that the verdict is still out on how God created the earth, talking about evolution, talking about the availability of condoms to try to control for birth control in other parts of the world, And certainly Senator Kerry has brought this up, saying, I believe in science, when we were talking about stem cell research. Have you heard in the past, Dan, can you remember when religion was such a part of a policy?
I can't recall when religion has ever intruded upon scientific matters as it has in this campaign season. Scientists are acutely sensitive to religious elements being brought into scientific discussions. They will say that it can be tolerated in some circumstances, but creationism, for example, is something that has the scientists, you know, terribly, terribly upset. We just recently had been a number of stories in the papers about creationist geology books being in the National Park Service gift shop at the Grand Canyon.
There's a book saying that the Grand Canyon was created by Noah's flood.
It was all done in 6,000 years. Now, some people might shrug and say, well, if anybody wants to read such nonsense, I mean, we really shouldn't get too excited about it. But scientists look upon that, at least many scientists do, as a kind of, you know, dark age theology intruding upon the scientific enlightenment that has been developed with great hardship and difficulty over many, many centuries. It's had a strong impact, I think, on many people in the scientific community.
1-800-989-8255. Omar in Columbus. Hi, Omar.
Hi, how you doing?
It must be pretty hot, heating up politically in your neck of the woods.
Oh, yes, it is.
Are you getting tired of it?
Yeah, I'm really getting tired of it, but I've made my mind a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Got a question for us.
Yes. I don't know if you remember back when we had that terrible tragic of the Discover, the President Bush gave a speech about space exploration, and it was a very upbeat speech. And I haven't heard anything from that ever since. And I was wondering if Kerry has picked up any of that and promised anything about space exploration.
Yeah, Jeff Mervis, yes. He did say we should go to Mars, didn't he?
Right. The president said we should go to the moon and Mars, and it should be human-based. But he didn't say how he was going to pay for it. And the problem is that right now NASA has mortgages running for many billions of dollars on some other projects that are already up there, like the space station, like repairing the space shuttle, and like fixing the Hubble telescope. I think that the Bush administration has backed away from that because there hasn't been a groundswell of public support. Senator Kerry has been a little bit more cautious and says that there is something to be gained, but if we can afford it, only if we can afford it, and puts more emphasis, I think, on robotic missions. In other words, the kinds of things you're going to be talking about next at Cassini, the rovers on Mars, and other instruments that can do science without people.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Well, I'll ask one very quick question.
Sure.
I was wondering, what's our capacity as far as, scientifically, where are we right now? Can we actually have the technology to send people back to the moon even or beyond?
Thanks for calling. Comment, Dan? Dan or Jeff, go ahead.
Well, I think we probably could mount a round trip to the moon in not too many years. I think going on to Mars would be an enormous endeavor that is at present beyond the capability of the space establishment, and how far off into the distance we would have to work to get that project launched, I don't know for certain. But the essential factor is that the cupboard is bare when it comes to paying for these things. And when the president was talking about, you know, bouncing from the moon to Mars, he was laying out a plan that would have to be paid for about three or four administrations from now. None of the bills would fall due during his tenure, assuming even if he is reelected.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes under the heading of talk is cheap. Very easy to talk about going to the moon when you don't have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. We've had the breakthrough of having the first private company send a rocket ship into suborbital space recently and winning that X Prize. Is there anything, any difference, any statements by the candidates about the future of private enterprise in space? Have they gone out and said anything?
They didn't address that in our questionnaire. We didn't ask them. But I think just to go back to the early question, there's no doubt the U.S. is still the preeminent space power. But as Dan said, you need money to do what you need to do. And other countries, you know, notably China, are moving ahead, not of the United States, but they're moving, you know, very quickly to build the capacity that we have.
How much of our science budget now has since 9/11, since the war on terrorism, has our science budget changed? Has money been moved from where it might have been going otherwise and been moved to the military uses of science, Dan?
Yeah, that's happened, I think, rather emphatically. When Clinton left office, the science budget was roughly 50-50 between military and civilian expenditures, the federal science budget. It since has changed, so I think now that the military side of it is about 57%. Furthermore, most of the increases that went to the National Institutes of Health, which is the biggest recipient of federal research money on the civilian side, most of that is for homeland security, for bioterrorism research. Well, perhaps justifiable, but meanwhile, there are many, many other activities that don't fall under the heading of bioterrorism that are worthy or that are important. And I think that many people in the public health community are alarmed because they feel that while bioterrorism is a threat that certainly must be addressed, there are other problems too, tuberculosis, AIDS, a variety of diseases. Now we see the catastrophe that's shaped up with the availability of flu vaccine. So the feeling is that while bioterrorism unquestionably is very, very important, we are favoring it with the neglect of other equally important problems.
Jeff Mervis, where do they stand on your survey on research spending?
Well, they both say that they favor more spending, but as Dan said, you know, talk can be cheap. Throughout the Bush administration, most of the increases have come when Congress added money to the president's request, except in the defense area and in bioterrorism. Senator Kerry, of course, hasn't had to present a budget as president. He says he supports doubling the budget for the National Science Foundation, which does basic research at universities. And that's an example of the kind of basic research that scientists would like to do. Whether he can deliver that if elected, given the size of the deficit, is another question.
Ira, if I could offer just a brief comment. We did research and development. It was one of the 12 questions we asked about as well. It is an important part of tech policy-oriented voters' views. And in response to our question, the two candidates gave examples of their priorities, I guess it's best to say, that were somewhat different. And in President Bush's case, for example, he cited nanotechnology, information technology, hydrogen fuel initiative as three areas of emphasis, whereas Senator Kerry emphasized National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health, Department of Energy, National Institutes of Standards and Technology, and NASA as areas that he would focus on, with examples being nanotechnology, advanced manufacturing, information technology, life sciences, clean energy, and industrial biotechnology. So we did have some feedback from the candidates in terms of their priorities in this area.
1-800-989-8255 is the number. We're talking about the candidate stands on science and technology on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow with Jeffrey Mervis, Roger Cochetti, and Dan Greenberg. Let's go to the phones. Hi, Barbara in Damascus, Maryland.
Hi.
Hi. Where's Damascus?
Where's Damascus? We're north of D.C.
There you go. Okay. We're situated.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned. I'm a big fan of science. I love science. But I'm a little concerned about the fact that there seems to be somewhat of a silence on the issue of adult stem cell research. I don't hear anything about that through the normal media. And my understanding is that the adult stem cell research is actually more promising than the embryonic one. And my question is, why do we only hear part of the story? And it seems to me that the stories that come out are always in favor of Kerry and not of Bush. And it just seems a little unfair, or in favor of quote-unquote science as opposed to religion.
Dan?
It's a good question.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Can I go ahead?
Go ahead, Jeff. Yeah.
And I think it gets to the heart of sort of what the real issue is. I think most scientists, the level of spending on either embryonic or adult stem cell research is tiny compared to the NIH budget, the National Institutes of Health, less than 1/10 of 1%. So we're not talking about a lot of money. But what the difference between the two candidates is we're talking about a policy that the Bush administration has that only a certain number of stem cell lines that have already been developed and exist before 2001 can be used. And most scientists see that as an unnecessary curb on scientific exploration of the possibilities that can come from it.
But why don't the scientists, or why aren't they willing to look into the adult stem cells so there isn't this moral issue?
Well, they look into it.
Well, but I don't hear anything about it. I you know, when you read, you
because there's not a controversy there, and see if I'm wrong on this, there's not that controversy there that there is on the embryonic stem cells.
I think I've come across a good deal. I can't give a citation in the scientific journals about adult stem cell research, and occasionally you see a story in the newspapers. But as Ira says, the argument is all about, you know, embryonic stem cells, and that's what gets the attention by the rules of the news business. Perhaps there should be more attention.
And I guess the reason for that, to answer your question, is the potential for using those to treat and cure diseases is greater because embryonic stem cells can turn into any kind of cell in the body potentially. They can treat muscles, they can treat organs, they can treat brain cells theoretically. They're not there yet. Adult stem cells are mature cells, and they can only be used to focus on specific tissues and specific organs.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Roger Cocchetti is Group Director of the U.S. Public Policy at the Computing Technology Industry Association, CompTIA, in Arlington, Virginia. And if you missed his survey, you can go to his site at CompTIA, or you can go to sciencefriday.com, and we'll send you to his site if you can't jot it down quick enough. Jeffrey Mervis is the Deputy News Editor for Science Magazine, and Dan Greenberg is author of Science, Money, and Politics, and he's also Washington Contributing Editor of The Lancet. Gentlemen, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good
weekend.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we're going to take a trip out to Titan, talk about what Cassini has seen. And some interesting stuff. Stay with us. We'll be right back.